Over the years, we've gotten used to the idea of exceptional portions of public land being set aside as wilderness. In fact, we've had 50 years to get used to the idea. That same flurry of major legislation that gave us civil rights laws in the 60s also gave us the Wilderness Act in 1964. It was a beginning, not an end. Areas are still being set aside as wilderness and seldom without controversy. In some eyes, we've set aside too much land that could have been valuable resource land. In other eyes, we've left too much land unprotected, vulnerable to chainsaws or mining gear or both or more. The annual Oregon Wilderness Conference takes place in Portland later this week. We've grabbed a couple of the people attending to talk about wilderness in historical and contemporary contexts. Bridget Callahan is the wilderness campaign organizer for the group Oregon Wild. Bridget, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you. We also have with us Rex Burkholder, who's a board member at Friends of the Outdoor School and project leader for the Outdoor School for Everyone campaign. Rex, thanks to you for joining us.
Good morning.
Bridget, let's start with you. Give us a little the thumbnail description of Oregon Wild and your participation. I understand you're fairly new to the organization.
That's correct. Let's see. Well, Oregon Wild is a 40-year-old conservation organization. We're actually celebrating our 40th anniversary this year, as well as the 50th, not to get those confused. But we've worked really hard to protect Oregon's wild lands, wild rivers, and waters. We've been pretty efficient and effective in what we've been doing. I have been with Oregon Wild since January this year, so I'm just shy of 5 months. And much of my work so far has been focused on putting together the 2014 Oregon Wilderness Conference. You are correct, it was an annual event years back, but this is actually the first time we're bringing it back in about 10 years.
Oh, my mistake. All right, I thought it had been an annual, but I just lost track then. So what marks the return then? What got you to bring this back?
Well, I think the 50th anniversary is a pretty significant date, and this seemed like a great time to kind of reinvigorate our base and remind folks that while there's a lot to celebrate, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Is this something of a dream job for you then, Bridget?
No. I have been focusing my efforts on organizing the Wilderness Conference, taking place starting this Thursday. But after that, I will refocus my efforts on two campaigns, the Crater Lake proposal and the wildlands in Southwest Oregon, known as the Calmy Office. So I'm changing gears in about 1 week's time.
All right, so lots on your plate for sure. Perhaps at least as much on the plate of Rex Burkholder. There's lots of stuff on your resume. You're a biologist, but also an elected official and involved with the Friends of Outdoor School. Can you give us the brief thumbnail sketch on you, Rex Burkholder?
Well, the brief thumbnail sketch is I've basically been interested in helping my community be a better place in various ways. I helped start the Bicycle Transportation Alliance and worked there for a number of years up in Portland. Worked a number of committees on the state level and ended up being elected at the metro level, which was about how do we create a sustainable region in Portland. Got to know lots of young people who are going to outdoor school, seeing how it inspired them and got them motivated to get involved with various issues, but also learning science, which was my background. And then seeing that this program actually, unfortunately, only about half the kids in Oregon get to go to outdoor school anymore. It's been a program around since the 50s, started in Curry County, and it teaches people about the place they live in, how to understand it, gives them the tools to make smart decisions about resource use and such, and it's disappearing. Our kids are getting stuck inside with their video games or their scheduled lives. They don't get out into the woods to experience it very much anymore, and especially with the kind of guidance programs that, like Outdoor School, gives them. It isn't just a play date. It's going out there and getting dirty and learning about how the world works.
Things like where
and
your water comes from.
We have critical issues coming up here that people need to know how the world works.
And what would be some of those critical issues?
Well, we start out with climate change. Big announcement today from Washington, D.C. about trying to lower emissions. But more than that, there's soil, water, forestry. Around the world, there's lots of stress is being put on the natural environment because of how many people live on the earth and our demands. And we have a lot of work to do to try to respond to those over the next, I'd say this next century is a critical time for us to think about how do we actually live within the limits of the earth and everybody have a decent standard of living, yet maintain the quality of the environment, the clean air, clean water that we all need, and also the animals need.
That, I imagine, was one of the real things that that is good about outdoor school, is that people get a chance to figure out where things like clean air and clean water come from.
No, it's actually, the shocking history of it is that it was started in Curry County in the late 50s by people who were concerned that their kids were becoming too urbanized. And I think back to my growing up in the 50s, and I was like, no, I spent all my time in the creek catching crawdads and everything else. But it's this is the concern of people. There are fishery biologists and foresters saying, you know, the kids need to understand, you know, where this stuff comes from. You know, where do we get our trees, our wood for our houses? You know, where does the water come from, and how does it stay clean? These are things that they're worried about 60 years ago, and they're even more concerned today. And yet our kids are even more divorced from the natural world today than they were then.
Has there been a sharp drop in outdoor school attendance?
Yeah, unfortunately, it started with the Measure 5 in the mid-90s, which really cut into school funding. And it became this fight for funds to pay for mandatory programs coming down from the federal and state government, and outdoor school isn't required. And so you see school districts struggling to pay for it, charging the parents, doing fundraisers, and even the school districts that have been keeping it going have cut it down to 3 days program versus a week-long program.
All right, outdoor school and wilderness and much more to talk about with Rex Burkholder and Bridget Callahan when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange. Your thoughts on wilderness, welcome to. Join us on the Exchange when we return in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking today about wilderness in a couple of contexts. Number one, this is the week of the Oregon Wilderness Conference back in Portland after a 10-year hiatus. It's an appropriate time to have a wilderness conference because it is also the 50th birthday of the Wilderness Act, signed into law in 1964, which made wilderness designations possible on public federal lands across the country. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about wilderness past, present, and future with Bridget and Rex. Our phone number is 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. I gave just the first names. Let me explain this a little more fully. Bridget Callahan is the Wilderness Campaign Organizer for the group Oregon Wild, which is hosting the Oregon Wilderness Conference. Rex Burkholder is a board member of the Friends of the Outdoor School, project lead in the Outdoor School for Everyone campaign, former elected official at Metro. Actually, you're still on Metro in the Portland area, Rex?
No, I graduated last year.
I graduated. Good way to put it. Bridget, I want to come to you then just for to kind of get things back to a real square one sort of area, which is when we talk about wilderness designations, what is being designated? What makes the requirement for, what makes the grade for wilderness?
Yeah, that's a great question. So essentially, this is public lands that have been set aside, designated by Congress, and once designated, it means that they're relatively safe from most threats. This includes logging, mining, road building, and other infrastructure. And what qualifies is that it has to be federal land and affected primarily, according to the act itself, by the forces of nature. And these have to be lands that are about 5,000 acres or more. Essentially, the saying goes that you can hike, canoe, you can hunt, you can backpack, you can snowshoe, you can camp in wilderness. You just have to leave your chainsaw and bulldozer at home.
So is there really nothing that is motorized allowed within the boundaries of a wilderness?
That's correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. And 5,000 acres or more, I mean, are there some places that are just as small as 5,000 acres? And obviously some much bigger. When we talk about the Calmeopsis, that's already 136,000 or something?
Yeah, so there's, you know, these are guidelines. There are certain loopholes. The Act itself is not perfect. There's ways to kind of tweak it, but essentially, it's about 5,000 acres and a pretty strong language in the Act itself.
There has been discussion over the years, I know from many years of covering environmental issues in the state of Oregon, where there are complaints about the people who want to see more wilderness protected, that some of the areas set aside long ago were so-called rock and ice wilderness, where the areas that were protected were not particularly valuable. They certainly didn't have good timber growing on them, et cetera. What's the general view of you at Oregon Wild?
Yeah, that's correct. So something that we're highlighting at the conference, and this is something that we're really kind of trying to get folks to put some context to the act and where we are at Oregon. So essentially, there are what we like to say is that Oregon is facing a wilderness deficit. And when I say that, what I'm talking about is that the percentage of land that we've protected in Oregon is minuscule. I give presentations across the state, and I frequently ask the audience, how much of the state do you think is actually protected? And the answers vary, and it goes anywhere from 15 to sometimes 35% or more. The truth is, Oregon has actually protected 4% of our state as wilderness. And much of that is rock and ice. That actually pales in comparison to a lot of our neighboring states. So California has protected 15% of their state. Washington is at 10, and even Idaho has doubled up on us, and they're at 8%. So just to kind of give an idea of where we are, 4% of our state is protected wilderness, and yes, much of that is rock and ice.
All right, so 4% protected. And Rex Burkholder, over the years with Outdoor School and other things you've been doing, have you had a chance to visit much of the wilderness in the state of Oregon?
Yeah, I actually worked in the woods as a forester when I was young, and then on my weekends, I would just stay up in the woods and go hiking and explore. I've climbed a couple of the peaks here in Oregon. It's an amazing experience to get out there and actually be away from everything that makes our civilization. You know, it's a good escape out there, and I encourage everybody to get out into the woods hiking, whether it's up in the rocks and ice or in places like Opal Creek, which are much easier to get to and accessible old growth, and it's wonderful to have those there. And personally, not related to Outdoor School, personally, it's, I think, a critical thing that we do protect some areas from any kind of development. And then, of course, we have to think about how do we work with what we have and do that better and do that more sustainably as well.
We're talking to Rex Burkholder and Bridget Callahan about wilderness, particularly in the state of Oregon. Here's Wolfgang in Sunny Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I'm not going to get into environmental politics. I mean, because this is distasteful on all sides. What I was going to talk about or share with you is I grew up outdoors, meadows, fields, forest, all of that stuff. And my parents were poor enough that we couldn't do anything on the weekends but drive into the countryside and do hikes. Lucky me, right? So, which brings me to my second. So, that connection is essential. It allows you to feel where stuff is coming from. You don't just shove a piece of salad or a piece of meat in your face. You actually have a connection. The second thing, and that's very, very much related, is somebody was talking about maintain a standard of living. And that's, I think, in great error, because it's maintain a standard of hiding from life, maintain so much stuff that is keeping us from actually being in relationship to ourselves, to life, to other people. It's stuff we are hiding from life. It's basically a huge wall of stuff. That's not a standard of living. That's a standard of being half alive, a zombie standard. And I think to get that across is, I mean, like, people, you don't need all this stuff. That stuff, I mean, like, how much can I give away, please? You know, I don't have much, but whatever I don't have doesn't keep me enchained to having to finance it, having to endure it, having to make payments on it. This is all garbage. Thank you very much.
All right, so enjoy the
pardon my French.
All right, thanks for that, Wolfgang. Appreciate it. Rex, I heard you laugh. You want to add to that?
Well, no, I think that's it's a great question. And when I meant about standard of living, I meant about living a quality of life that's, you know, you're free from hunger and want and you have a place to live in. I think the issue of how much of the resources we consume in the world is the critical one of the next century. And giving our kids the ability to make these decisions and understand their choices is a key part of what Outdoor School, but it's bigger than just Outdoor School. It's this idea of place-based science education. So you understand how the world works, what your place is in it, and then how to respond in an intelligent manner. And I think it's just not for those Outdoor School is one component of it, but the real goal of our organization is to make sure that kids of all ages get experiences so so they can answer those kind of questions that the caller gave, which is, what is enough? How do you relate to the world? What is your responsibility to the rest of the creatures that live on the earth, other humans as well as the others? The idea of having a good, strong science background so you actually can get away from the emotional battles over these types of things and say, what is the right thing we need to do? This is the outcome that we seek to give our kids, and this is why I'm participating in this conference. It's about how do you connect the next generation so they can make and give them the tools and understanding so they can make smart decisions. How much wilderness should we be saving? How do we harvest our timber in a way that's sustainable? How do we farm in a way that maintains the quality of that soil at the same time producing the food we need as a society? Important, critical questions that, unfortunately, our standard education is kind of doesn't do a very good job. It's very abstract, and this gets you down to earth and say, these are real questions we got to answer.
We're talking about wilderness here on the Jefferson Exchange with Rex Burkholder, who's a board member of the Friends of the Outdoor School and is the leader of the Outdoor School for Everyone campaign. Bridget Callahan is the Wilderness Campaign Organizer for Oregon Wild, which is also the host organization for this week's Oregon Wilderness Conference taking place in Portland. It's the 40th anniversary of Oregon Wild and the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act itself. From Congress, you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about wilderness and its values and the things we expect to get from wilderness and whether we're doing enough or too much so far or just about the right amount. Let us know what you're thinking. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So when we talk about the protection of wilderness, Bridget, under the Wilderness Act, I mean, how far-sighted was the act? Did it specify the kinds of values we were trying to preserve, whether it's scenic or whether it's for natural resources or this and much more?
Yeah, I have to say, I think the general consensus at Oregon Wild and other conservation groups is that the Wilderness Act was incredibly visionary for the time. Congress went on record with remarkable articulation of the wilderness ideal. And this was extraordinary because it was at a time when westward expansion was still part of the American psyche. Destruction of wilderness was simply a byproduct of progress. And this acknowledged that progress can go too far. So there are several, and I just wanted to throw this in there. I have to read it. This is a part of the Wilderness Act, which is unbelievably poetic for Congress. I would have a hard time thinking that our Congress today could write something such as this, but if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
It said, a wilderness, in contrast with those areas where man, in his own works, dominate the landscape, is hereby recognized as an area where the earth and community of life are untrammeled by man, where man himself is a visitor who does not remain. I think that's incredibly profound for the time. But to answer your question, yes, the Act specifically mentions that this is land that is to be preserved for historical, scientific, educational, scenic, recreational purposes. And you can find that language in there.
It is interesting, an area where the earth and its community of life are untrammeled by man, because nobody's actually kept out of wilderness areas. I mean, obviously, the things you can bring in are strictly limited. But, I mean, was part of the designation of wilderness meant to be places where maybe people really wouldn't go?
Well, you know, I think that there are some places that perhaps, you know, we should just leave alone to a certain degree. There are places that are wilderness that are extremely remote. And yeah, you're free to go there, but you know, every time that you bring humans into an otherwise unaltered landscape, there's a possibility of degradation. So it's something that we should be considering as we're moving into wilderness areas.
Rex Burkholder, you mentioned Opal Creek, so you got some experience with the Oregon wilderness areas. What are some of the ones that you find quite significant? What are the ones that impress you the most that you spent time in? Let's put it that way.
Well, a key part of it is being accessible. You know, I live in the Portland region, and to be able to get out to someplace on Mount Hood or Mount Jefferson, you know, someplace where, you know, it's pretty amazing. You can drive an hour, and then you can hike in an hour or two, and you are in, you know, the nature that this place was like when people first came here. And that's pretty amazing. I have traveled a bit abroad down the Kalmiopsis area, Crater Lake area, and then one of my favorite places to go is far southeast Oregon, where there isn't much wilderness right now, but like the Steens Mountains, Heart Mountain area, which just because they're remote tend to be less trammeled, but they're not, they don't have that protection, which I think wilderness could provide for that, because they do get grazed on, and there are the opportunities there for, or the possibilities of mining, which would, as you know, make major changes in the landscape. But again, the wilderness that I appreciate, I guess, the most are the stuff that I can get to pretty easily close by, and I know many people in the urban areas appreciate having wilderness close to home.
And how does that set up for trying to protect wilderness areas, Bridget Callahan, when you're working on campaigns for protection? I mean, does it help to have a good population base to work from? Is it easier, for example, to get wilderness protected within, say, an hour or two drive of Portland than it is to get something protected in far southeastern Oregon where the people are few and far between?
Yeah, you know, it's a delicate balance. As you know, several parts of Mount Hood are protected wilderness, and we have several places around the Portland area where you can drive just about an hour and get to wilderness. And I think it is important to let folks know that wilderness is accessible. You know, we're free to recreate in these areas, and I think that's really, I think there's a lot of misperceptions of what you can or can't do in wilderness. And I think it is really important to note that it is accessible, and it is open for recreating purposes. And that's, you know, part of the blessing of wilderness areas is because if you look at the economic value of you know, Oregon's rising modern economy and recreation and tourism, that's something that we should definitely be thinking about.
Let us take a call. We have John in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about wilderness in Oregon with Bridget Callahan and Rex Burkholder.
Hi. So my question is, a consensus over the years, you know, traditionally it was the timber. The image of the timber people was they wanted to cut down every tree and the environmentalists wanted to save every tree. But there must be some consensus over the many, many years of this. And so anyway, that's my question.
All right. Thanks for that. Rex, you want to take that one on? Because you've been kind of in the middle of this for a bit longer, I think.
Yeah, well, there's lots of work that's been done in Oregon, which I think is a model for the country as a whole. One being our land use planning system that protects farm and forest land from urbanization. If you go to other states, you'll find housing way up in the mountains and making very difficult for people to make a living through timbering or even down in the valley farming. So the land use system has been, you know, a really wonderful thing there to help protect and make our cities actually stronger too, which is, I don't think people were planning on that when they passed that originally. I just want to tell you a little story. I went to an outdoor school. It was on the last day on a Friday. The kids had been there for a week and it had been pouring down rain all week and such, and they had just done a unit where they looked at a group of trees, a little grove of trees, and they actually figured out how many houses could they build. They did timber cruising, and this is after studying plants and water and soil, and they had this discussion, and it was amazing. These are 11-year-old kids talking about the trade-offs between, okay, well, I don't want to cut any trees, but, you know, I live in a wooden house. What can I do? I can stop using so much paper. And the conversation stopped when one young girl said, well, you know, the thing I'm going to do to save paper is that when I go pee, I'm not going to use toilet paper. And everybody just shut up. You know, the TMI, too much information. But that kind of sophisticated discussion about what is the right balance, I think, is what we need. Because in Oregon, we have this thing where our rural economies have collapsed because we can't come to any agreement. And we don't have that consensus. And I think the caller's right. You know, we need that consensus that says what's appropriate to save forever wilderness, what's appropriate to manage for the needs that we have, and let's make those decisions based on, you know, rational decision making and science and such and not emotions. I think we don't have that consensus yet. And I think that's what the Wilderness Conference is about, is that there is right now, we need to protect more, but we also need to make sure we protect our clean air and clean water while we're getting the food and fiber we need from our natural surroundings.
So, Bridget, obviously there are going to be voices at this. Go ahead. You're trying to say something here.
Yeah, I just wanted to say real quickly. So, we've come a long way since the timber wars in the 1980s. And something that I'm really proud of is that Oregon Wild is very involved in collaboratives all across the state of Oregon, working with various stakeholders, Forest Service, landowners, and I think that it seems that it's important to note that there is so much more compromise and cooperation now than there was back in the day. We work hard to find common ground with the Forest Service and reasonable folks in the timber industry. Oregon Wilds actually won 2 national awards from the Forest Service for our efforts to design and implement sound thinning projects that restores forest health while protecting environmental values. And I think there is that balance that you can find. And I just want to note that things have come a long way.
Okay, thanks for putting that in. We'll come back and talk more with Bridget Callahan and Rex Burkholder about wilderness in Oregon and elsewhere on the eve of the Wilderness Conference coming later this week to Portland. And, of course, the 50th birthday of the Wilderness Act itself. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Bridget and Rex and you in a minute. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about wilderness here on the Exchange today for a couple of reasons. Number one, the Oregon Wilderness Conference 2014 is coming to Portland later this week. First time it's been held in 10 years. And it happens to fall on approximately the 50th birthday, well, at least this is the 50th birthday this year, of the Wilderness Act put into place in 1964, which allowed designations of wilderness on federal land across the country and has been used a lot since that time. In the eyes of some people, too much. In the eyes of others, not enough. Tell us what you think about wilderness and its designation and the use of the law and what we should be thinking about when we talk about wilderness. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone anywhere you can hear us. Our Rogue Valley local number is 541-552-6782, and our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So before we get too far away from it again, since we're talking about some of the attendees at the Wilderness Conference, Bridget, why don't you give us a general outline for the events and when they begin in Portland later this week?
Sure. So we're kicking things off on Thursday evening at the local brew pub in Portland called Migration Brewery. And we'll have Kirk Richardson of Keene as our welcome speaker. And really the heart of the conference starts on Friday morning. So it's divided into 3 portions. The first is in the morning. We have some speakers and panels, which Rex is a part of. Then we'll break for some organized activities around the city. And then we'll reconvene in the evening for dinner and our keynote speaker, which is award-winning author and photographer Michael Lanza.
Michael what?
Michael Lanza.
Mm-hmm.
He's written a book called Before They're Gone. It's a cautionary tale about our national parks. He spent a lot of time traveling through America's national parks with his family. We're really excited to have him.
All right, so the majority of activities then on Friday then for the Oregon Wilderness Conference 2014.
That's right, and it wouldn't be an Oregon Wild event unless we offered some hikes. So on Saturday, the day after the meet of the conference, we're offering 2 hikes to Tamanoas Falls and Ogle Creek, and I'm actually leading the one to Tamanoas Falls. I'm just trying to pack it all in, I suppose.
All right, sounds like a busy weekend. Let's take a call here. We have Don and Eugene on the line. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking wilderness with Bridget Callahan and Rex Burkholder.
Well, I just wanted to make a suggestion. You, at the first, complained that kids are tied to their video games, and I'm not a gamer, but I have a suggestion for you. And I also want to commemorate Dr. John McMenamin, who led a group of us biology students in Southern California out into the Mojave Desert and introduced us to the ways that things live in the desert. It was a real epiphany for me and made me connected to the wilderness forever. And the question is, how do you impart knowledge to young people? How do you get them to know what the silent war that's going on all around them for survival in the wild, and to know these brave little plants and animals that fight to survive. And I think what you could do is to create a video game that taught these bits of information, and then when they do go out into the wilderness, they would say, aha, I see that. Now I know this plant. This plant is a friend of mine, and I'm going to help protect it. You see what I'm talking about?
I do. So you actually use their screen time, in a sense, to get them educated about the stuff they would find if they went out to the woods themselves.
Exactly. You subvert these little brains into being wilderness. You know, you bring that spirit, the spirit of the wilderness, into them, and they discover it, which is how you really teach, isn't it, after all? And Dr. John McMenamin was a great guy. I hear he just passed away. You know, he took us out. I wanted to be a doctor, so we had to study how to name plants, for crying out loud. You know, who wants to take that class? By the end of the day, we'd spent a couple of days out in the Mojave. I was completely converted into, I guess, like all you people, just a nature freak. And that's what did it, is knowing what's going on out there. And I think a video game could do that.
It's a great story and a good suggestion. Thanks for that, Don. Appreciate it. Rex, you've worked around a fair amount of kids. I mean, do you think that might work, or is there something that's already in existence, maybe?
Well, there may be, but what I wanted to point out is that how glorious a mud puddle can be. That children, just getting them out and having them touch the world, is they get it. It's pretty amazing. Just getting them out there and having the chance to walk in the woods, play in a puddle, look at things, they will then, their curiosity is open, and their minds are open to that stuff. There's a writer named Richard Louv has written about something he calls nature deficit disorder, and just talks about the danger that we face as people when we get connected from the natural world we live in. And it doesn't have to be a wilderness. It can be, like I said, a mud puddle or a tree that you spend time climbing. But the idea of connecting kids with nature, the simplest thing of all, is just getting them out there. The man who called who said his family is so poor that all they got to do was go hiking on the weekends. You know, that person had obviously a very rich life without having to develop alternative ways to see that world. And again, this is what the goal here is, to have people appreciate what's there. And most of it is kids don't need much. They just need to be thrown out the door and said, go out and play in the woods. And it can make a huge difference in their lives and how they perceive the world.
We were talking earlier. Go ahead, Bridget.
Sorry, I was going to add, part of the reason why I wanted, it was really interesting having Rex attend the conference, was when we first announced that we were hosting this panel, Connecting the Next Generation to Wilderness, I was completely overwhelmed by the response. I have been contacted by concerned parents, teachers, even the Girl Scouts. It was really surprising to me how passionate people are about this issue. And I'm really excited about the panel, but I mean, just the stories I'm hearing from parents. There's a gal who I talked to, and the whole reason why she got involved in this issue is because her kids were no longer allowed to play tag at school, and it's turned into this huge project she's involved with now. And I just really commend all of the work that people like Rex and others are doing to address this issue.
Let us take another call. Here's John and Vanita. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Bridget Callahan and Rex Burkholder. We're talking wilderness.
Nature deficit disorder. I'm going to steal that one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, one thing it seems like people, when they get on this kind of a conversation, I really, really hope you guys do good with the outdoor program. I remember that when I was a kid and people going through that. And I was always raised in the backwoods and all that, so I really feel this. But we have got to not keep stepping over and around population of humanity.
We need to focus attention squarely on it, you're saying.
Well, it's got to be right there with the front of the list and whatever else is really important. In my lifetime, I'm 63 years old, and I've watched, I've been in Oregon virtually all my life, and all these major changes that have really weakened the natural world around me are every bit attributable to mankind. And you don't have to have a whole lot of people to have a good life. So, you know, it's not a hard concept. And I think the children should be, their eyes should be open to that, as well as, mosquito larvae and such.
All right. Thanks for that. Appreciate it. And Rex, since you made the first sound, I'll let you respond first.
There's great comments there people are making. So they just, certainly raised up these issues. A key slogan of outdoor school and other conservation education programs is, we teach people how to think. We don't teach them what to think. But getting these concepts about carrying capacity, about limits, about consumption and resource conservation, when you see kids come through these kind of programs, they are then equipped to think about these issues in a way that I think most Americans aren't. Because as you probably know, Americans are notoriously illiterate in the area of science. and just which is, you know, we get all these fights over, do we teach creationism in schools? Is climate change real? And it's because people just don't have the tools to understand what's out there. And I think the issue of population is a classic one there, where, well, it looks kind of empty around here in Oregon. What's the problem? But because of not understanding the issue of numbers, what does 7 billion mean, type of thing. But I think the point is giving these young people in the next generation who will take over, they're not going to be young forever, they're going to take over, they need to have those skills and knowledge so they can make smart choices.
Well, when we're talking about outdoor deficit or wilderness deficit, or I forget what it was we were talking
nature
about.
Deficit
nature deficit
disorder.
That's right, NDD. But you had mentioned earlier, Bridget Callahan, that there's a wilderness deficit in Oregon with only 4% of the land of the state protected as wilderness. I failed to ask at that time how that compares to other states. I have to believe there are some that are even far more in a deficit, and some others that are obviously way ahead of us. Alaska would come to mind for lots of wilderness.
Yeah. Well, it's really hard to, you're kind of comparing apples and oranges to a certain degree. And so, you know, we try to look at what our neighboring states are doing that have, similar political climates and kind of the Northwest reputation of being green. And I think that's where one of the misperceptions is that we have this idea that Oregon is this very green, environmentally friendly state. And then when you look at where we stand amongst some of our fellow neighboring states in the Northwest, you know, it's really surprising to see that we've just fallen behind. So, I guess in comparison, thinking that Idaho has 8%, something has gone amiss.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take another call. We have, Jeff and Roseburg on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking wilderness with Bridget Callahan and Rex Burkholder.
Yeah, I'm down in Roseburg, and we have the Umpqua National Forest. And, there's... like the Boulder Creek Wilderness in there that burned in 86 and then burned again a few years ago. And they didn't put the fire out, and then it burned the whole next valley. But these areas don't get used that much. And then, I took a friend of mine that's older and overweight, and we camped out in a good place to camp that you have to have access for regular folks, instead of, healthy young people saying, oh, let's lock this all up and have it not be used.
But is the point for human beings to use it or for just to be there? In other words, sort of banking it for future generations. I'm asking you, Jeff.
Well, I'm trying to think of a good way to respond to that. What is the point of it if it sits there and burns down?
All right, let's take this up with Bridget. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Jeff. So Bridget, what is the attitude about use of wilderness areas or not? Because I'm sure you've heard this argument before.
Sure. Well, there's a wide variety of reasons why we want to support wilderness. And part of that is because we want folks to go and recreate and bring in visitors and enjoy. I myself am a rafter. I really enjoy going whitewater rafting, even though myself, every time I get off, I won't do it again. But there's a lot of reasons to support wilderness beyond recreating and accessibility. Where he was referring to Boulder Creek, we're looking at the headwaters of some of our drinking water for much of the state. It protects our clean drinking water. It provides critical habitat for wildlife. It's an investment in the future of our state, and it's a legacy that we should provide for posterity. So there's a lot of reasons other than just simply our own personal use.
All right, we mentioned earlier that you are, in fact, the Wilderness Campaign Organizer at Oregon Wild, and so you mentioned once the conference is over, you'll return your attention to some of the specific places in Oregon that you think need further protection. So the presentations on the table right now, or the proposals, are for wilderness within Crater Lake National Park, and then some issues with the Kalmiopsis Wilderness as well. Let's start with the Crater Lake Wilderness. And I'm sure people are thinking, well, it's a national park already. Why do you need a wilderness within there?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just to clarify, so it's the surrounding backcountry as well, which is extremely important. The national park, so a lot of national parks in the United States are also designated wilderness. Wilderness is, as I mentioned, the gold standard for protecting our public lands. It's the best we can do for our natural treasures. So a lot of our national parks are designated wilderness. Crater Lake is not. And there are some loopholes there. For example, even within the park itself, there is a proposal for a company to offer helicopter tours around the rim of the crater. When you think about the shape of the caldera and how sound travels, probably not the solitude and tranquility you come to expect with Crater Lake. With designated wilderness, that wouldn't happen. So we'd like to extend additional protection for the park itself, but also the critical backcountry, which is extremely important for the headwaters of the Deschutes, the Umpqua, the Rogue, as well as critical wildlife habitat in that Cascade Corridor.
All right, and very quickly, because we're almost out of time, issues with the Kalmiopsis Wilderness?
Yeah. So the Kalmiopsis, it's, you know, pretty remote, pretty rugged southwest corner of Oregon. Absolutely stunning, beautiful terrain. Secretary of Interior Bruce Babbitt once declared it was the most biologically diverse, beautiful place that is the most endangered. And there's a lot of threats to the area right now. Kalmiopsis was first designated wilderness in 1964, but we'd like to add to it, including some of the threatened areas surrounding the existing wilderness.
All right. Bridget Callahan is the Wilderness Campaign Organizer at Oregon Wild. Rex Burkholder is Board Member at Friends of the Outdoor School and Project Lead for Outdoor School for Everyone's Campaign. I want to thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange, the Wilderness Conference in Portland. The events begin Thursday and end with some field trips on Friday. You can find it all at OregonWild.org. Thank you again both for joining us. Tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock, Northwest Farmers Against Hunger. At 8:30, we'll talk about the climate recovery ordinance being considered in Eugene. And then we'll talk to the author of the book Eat Pretty about Beauty Through Diet tomorrow at 9 o'clock. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant, Megan Mercier. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you and have a great day.